Please be advised, the following podcast may contain opinions, advice, or other suggestive content regarding mental health, and as we are not experts, should be treated as discretionary. Please consult with a medical professional if you are struggling with mental health issues. Alternatively, if you are experiencing a mental health emergency, please dial 988 or go to your nearest emergency room. Welcome back to the Luminosity Podcast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Quinn.
Hey, and it's Justin Crawford here.
And we've got a really exciting episode for you guys today. We're going to be talking about love and respect, both as it pertains to oneself and others. Now, this kind of came about super last minute. We were originally going to do an episode on self-love, and you might find that we incorporate aspects of self-love and still talk about that. But I went through a pretty interesting experience earlier this afternoon. We're recording this around 12:45 p.m. Pacific time. And I went through this experience today that really impacted me, and I wanted to share it on the podcast. And I thought, what's the best way to share this story and create sort of a narrative around it as it pertains to mental health and a podcast episode? And I thought it made more sense to call this episode Love and Respect as opposed to Self-Love. So we hope you enjoy it, and I guess I'll kick it off.
That was the best introduction you've ever done on this podcast.
Really?
So Kevin, I said by episode 20, we will have this so down packed that there will be zero question about why we started podcasting together. I'm very proud of you. I think I was 250 episodes into these other shows before we did this, and I was like, I can't wait to see Kevin grow as a host. And that was amazing. And you are doing amazing.
Thank you. And we're not even at episode 20 yet. This is episode 14, so we beat even that goal. Anyway, so here's the story. I want to kick things off by telling a story about a mean old grump. I hate to be judgmental. And in mental health, certain types of therapy, they say not to judge your own judging. But nonetheless, that was a judgment, and I'll admit it. And part of the reason why I find myself judging this so-called mean old grump is because I judged him in the moment for the way he treated me. And I guess I'll just jump right in. So I recently moved again. I'm now living in Woodland Hills, California. I was living in Encino. And I was staying at a family friend's house in Encino. And I went to Barnes & Noble today to buy them a Taschen book as a thank you gift for letting me crash there for a bit. So I was just having this great morning, super easy breezy. I took my dogs on a walk. I had a couple phone calls. I had a couple cups of coffee. It was really great, you know, just a typical run-of-the-mill morning. And I was really just content. And I was even on my way driving to Barnes & Noble, I was practicing one of my mindfulness techniques, which is identifying emotions. I tend to rate where I am from 0 to 5 in terms of different emotions. So say anger. Okay, anger is at a 1 today. Anxiety is at a 2. I feel slightly more anxious than I do angry. How about peace? Oh, peace is at a 3. Speaking of which, love and joy are also at 3s. You know, it's a technique I learned in dialectical behavioral therapy that you can actually number from 0 to 5 where you fall on the scale of certain emotions. And it's a good mindfulness technique. So I did that on my drive to Barnes & Noble. And I walk into the store at Barnes & Noble. Wrigley is with me. And I go upstairs to the upper level to browse the Taschen books. Taschen books, for anyone who doesn't know, they're kind of like those coffee table books, the big ones. They're more like art pieces or coffee table, it's just like coffee table books as opposed to like a paperback book. You know, they're big, but they make for like good house decorations, or they're usually, it's great photography. And the family who I stayed at, they love those books. So I am scrolling the Taschen books, and this older gentleman walks up to the aisle, and he looks maybe, I want to say late 50s, early 60s, you know, gray hair, glasses. And Wrigley, who listeners already know, is a 28-pound bundle of joy, love, and fluffy, cuddly goodness. Wouldn't harm a fly, the friendliest dog ever. Just wants to play, if anything, right? So he's sitting down, Wrigley's minding his own business, and I'm scrolling the Tashin books. I didn't even see this guy come up next to me. And Wrigley gives him a, oof, like a slight little bark. In my opinion, it was because Wrigley saw another guy come through the aisle and like, oh, it's playtime, right? Someone's here. And it was completely innocent. And, you know, I was like, Wrigley, don't bark. Like, and I pulled him away. I'm like, so sorry about that. He's completely friendly. And the guy was so startled. He like jumped out of his, you know, if he were sitting in a chair, you would think he jumped out of his chair. There was like a visual startle that happened in his body and went through his body. And he was like, oh. And I was like, oh, wow. Like this guy was really alarmed by my cute little dog's barking. And just as I'm apologizing and I'm like, you know, I'm so sorry. He's completely friendly. He takes it as an opportunity to kind of be, not even kind of, just be incredibly rude to me. And he goes, can you go to a different part of the store? I don't want to be licked or barked at by a dog while I'm scrolling for books. In the most condescending tone, as if I had like wronged him somehow for my dog giving us a playful bark. And I was completely surprised by that comment. And I go, sure. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, I just can't believe his tone. And what bothered me the most was that he didn't say, please. He didn't say, can you please go to a different part of the store? And on top of that, his tone, I was really starting to get heated by his comment in that way. So I obliged and I, you know, moved down the aisle to a different aisle or whatever. And in my head, I'm like, I can't believe this guy, like, that he just expects me to abide by whatever his self-centered worldview is, that, you know, I'm in the wrong for having my dog in the store. By the way, Barnes & Noble is dog friendly, at least the one in Calabasas. So it just really got me upset. And he walked off, he got his book. I go back to scrolling for books. I finally pick one out and I go down the escalator and I go in the checkout line and I see him again. And this just came out of my mouth. I wasn't like planning it necessarily. It just sort of like came out as I walked past him. Cause I'm like, you know, I'm literally going to walk right past this guy. And if he says anything again about my dog, then I'm going to be sure I say something first. So as I'm walking past him, I go, is that close enough for you, buddy? And Wrigley licked his leg as he walked by.
Oh my God. You should see my face.
Yeah, Justin's face is shock.
Okay, then what?
And the guy goes, what? He just licked me. And he looks at the employee checking him out. He goes, did you see that? He just licked me. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, I just, you know, I'm now checking out at my own counter. I'm like, this guy's ridiculous. Like, God forbid my cuddly, fluffy, cute dog licks you and gives you affection. That's what you're complaining about? My God, like the nerve on people. And like, it would have been one thing if at the very beginning when we had that interaction, he was like, I'm so sorry, buddy, but you know what? I have this fear of dogs and I would greatly appreciate if you could please go to a different part of the store. Thank you for your understanding. If he had said that, I would have been like, oh yeah, of course. Like, thank you so much for telling me. But it's not a perfect world. And this guy chose to handle it poorly with poor communication and emotional affectivity, which is never healthy in mental health. So naturally, I respond with the same emotional affectivity. It's only natural. So right. Anyway, back to the checkout line. He starts like rambling and talking at me and talking at my dog, and I'm just ignoring him. Like, my God, this guy's ridiculous. If he's complaining about my dog licking him, I'm like, this is the most ridiculous reason to be upset. I don't get it. I'm a dog lover, so maybe I'm biased, but like, how could you be that upset that a like cute dog licks you? That's ridiculous. So anyway, he looks to the employees and he's like, should that dog even be in here? And they go, yeah, totally fine. You know, they kind of take my side, which I appreciated. Not that it matters or that there are sides to be taken. But it was kind of like reaffirmation, validation that like, hey, I'm not in the wrong here. Like, it's a dog friendly store, you know. I took him away when he barked at you. It was under control until you like blew it out of proportion. And And he was like, should he even be in the store? And the employees are like, yeah, totally fine. And he goes, oh, really? Like, and then he's like, well, he shouldn't. There are people eating in the cafe over there.
He just sounds bitter.
So bitter, man. So bitter. Like, just the biggest asshole. Like, and that was like the whole interaction. And I let it go, whatever, it's over. But I was just like, wow, like this guy took something so minuscule, which was my dog barking at him, and he ran with it to be like the biggest asshole ever in the way he, not only in the way he responded, but then when I made like kind of a warranted snarky comment back at him, like, which I don't feel bad about. I'm sorry. Like, you know, if he's going to speak to me that way, he should be like, hey, eye for an eye. So, you know, he should just know what he's getting into. And I here's the thing. I even get a little infuriated just talking about it, because it's like I said, this guy just took it and ran with it. It was an opportunity for him to be a complete asshole. And it's like, he was getting off on it, you know, like he was so self-centered to the point that he believed that like I was in the wrong for having a dog in the store, that like anyone else, you know, is going to see that they're going to take his side. So when they took my side and said, it's a dog friendly store, he's fine. Then he's like, oh, really? Oh. It is a testament to how conceited and self-centered people can be, where it's like, if they think that they've been wronged by you, that it's an opportunity for them to be a complete asshole to you. And I think that's wrong.
I agree with you.
And so I struggled with that. Anyway, that's the story. And I thought it would be a good segue into our conversation on love and respect, because the truth is, I can walk away from that interaction feeling self-love in the way it was handled. You know, I didn't say anything or do anything I regret or that wasn't warranted. You know, I didn't break out into a fist fight. Sorry.
You can't hear the dog, trust me.
The dog's a barking listener. Perfect timing for a story like this. But, you know, I didn't break out into a fist fight or something like that, something I would have regretted. Of course not. I'm not a violent person. But, you know, telling him like, hey, sorry, is this close enough for you, buddy? And like, you know, Wrigley walking right past him, I think that's warranted, you know, like lets him know, hey, I didn't appreciate the comment that you made. So I can walk away from that interaction feeling self-love and respect for myself in the way it was handled, in the way I perceived everything and you know, what went down. Can that guy do the same? Can he walk away with self-love or self-respect? Did he have it to begin with? You know, like, how does a person like that, do they love themselves in the way that they should? You know, if they're making snarky, like condescending comments like that, you know, with the tiniest little offenses, you know, that don't really warrant that kind of behavior. And it just makes me wonder, like, does that guy love himself enough to like have grace for another human being, you know, because it was not my intention to have Ridley bark at him. And I think when you love yourself, you're also, it shows in how you love other people. It's kind of like they say people who are judgmental of others are also equally, if not more, judgmental and self-critical of themselves. So it's like, if we apply that same concept at thinking whatever you're projecting out into the world is also a reflection of how you view yourself. Are you projecting love and grace and understanding to other people when you see them? Or are you not? And if you're not, then what does that say about the kind of love, grace, and understanding you give yourself? Does that make sense?
That makes total sense. And I think the story you just told too kind of sets the tone of how a lot of us don't often take enough time to do that type of analysis, right? So kudos to you, because a lot of times in this human experience, I've often seen that like when you're interacting with people, it's crazy. I've had two guys, similar situations, not with my dog, obviously, but there's been situations that I'm like, dang, you really are so unhappy. But where I'm getting at is for you to experience something like that, even in a Barnes and Noble, you know, in a dog situation with someone that's just being grumpy, to take the approach, even the way that you acted wasn't out of, you know, out of line or anything. But to then question how that person is, how they are being, how they are doing based on the reaction you had to how they acted. And I think it's like this never ending cycle sometimes, negative, mainly negative, that when you experience some type of interaction like that, most folks aren't even thinking to themselves, like, you know, they're usually reacting, right? But something that we can encourage folks today, even as you're thinking about, you know, how do you take care of yourself and the things that we'll dive into here in a moment, you know, when you're interacting with people, it is so insane. Kevin experiences this at Barnes & Noble. I'd experienced it, you know, at the Soho House and at the barbershop in the past couple of days, with folks that were bartenders and barbers. And I have the same thought. I almost tipped a lid off to them. Like they
were. What's your story? I remember you telling me about that. I want to hear that story.
Yeah.
Too.
Just in short. So I'd called Kevin the other day. We were texting and I was like, I just like, you know, both of us are going through major transitions in our lives. And I think we could be very stressed. We could be very anxious. We could be very depressed. We're choosing not to, right? Him and I have really worked on trying to make sure that, you know, as young as we are, we have to remain very optimistic about the environments that we're in which my case is Nashville. And so anyway, I get here like a week ago and I'm usually this like happy-go-lucky kid that runs around everywhere I'm at. And I, you know, this past couple of weeks, I've just been really mellow, super low-key, trying to take some time for me, which is why I wanted to do self-love today with Kevin, or self-love and respect. But anyway, I was at this bar with some friends on Saturday, and the bartender, I was reading his energy to begin with. I do that everywhere I go. Kevin, probably you do the same thing, but I don't listen to people. I don't wait for them to say something. And Ed Milet's podcast actually said this morning, which is so ironic to what we're talking about today. He said he doesn't really listen to people anymore unless it's the people that he respects, because then when they have something to say, it's usually the right thing to say. Or the right thing at the right moment to say. Something that Kevin and I have tried to practice a lot of is just like we're listening to each other more and we're respecting the space. We've sat down with silence sometimes. We'll probably do that next week when you come to Tennessee. Like, anyway, there's power in that. Where I'm getting at is I read this energy of this bartender. I knew he was stressed. I knew he was overwhelmed. And I was just watching him. He was looking at the liquor bottles confused. He was like aggressively pulling receipts, slamming, you know, drink. Oh God, it was so toxic. So my first thought to my friends, I say, hey, I don't think we should really get served by him. I was like, I don't really care for the energy. And I also want to give him some space because three additional guys on top of what he was dealing with was not healthy. I could already tell. Long behold, they were like, well, it was really hot outside too. And he was the only bartender inside. So we're like, screw it, whatever. And I was like, okay, just watch what happens. Like literally watch what happens. Tell me why he gave us the hardest time ever, complained about everything that we wanted. And when I asked him, I was like, hey, can I get this glass of wine? And then I changed my mind. Not on purpose, by the way. I was not doing this to be an asshole. I was just like, hey, any chance, like it's really hot outside. And can we do the like, you know, frozen, you know, wine drink or whatever? Oh, he blew a lid completely. He's like, you know, you said you wanted this drink. Now you want to switch it. Now I have to go do this, that, and the third. And I didn't react. You know, I could have. And internally, I was like, oh, boys, hold me back. Hold me back. I didn't react. And I do that a lot recently, especially on the road. You know, as I'm going back and forth driving a lot, I don't react to people. And so it's almost like an avoidant behavior style, if you're thinking about it in that terms. I don't react. If I had your dog with you at Barnes & Noble, I would have looked at the guy, completely acted like I didn't even hear him at all, and then just went about my day. And I'm getting to a really important point, but I'll share this barbershop story real quick. So I was at the barbershop yesterday, and this loudmouth barber, one of two in the store, by the way, why are you yelling? There's like four of us in here. Worst attitude I've ever had from a barber. I was almost scared that he was like, you know, straight edging with a razor. And client before him, they had like this heated conversation about something this guy was mad about. So then I get in the seat and listen, I'm not particular and I'm not the kind of person that like, you know me by now, Kevin, but anybody listening, like I'm not ever going to project any type of negative energy. If I have negative energy, I keep that shit at the house. So anyway, I'm like trying to be joyful and, you know, and I have a very simple buzz cut beard situation. Like every barber should know how to do this. And my hair was like literally, it's non-existent. I buzz my hair. So then he made a big deal about the centimeters of the razor and stuff. Listen, if I actually cared enough about hair that I don't have, like, I would have loved to be like, oh, 0.5 centimeters are on this side and then you could taper this way, la, 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 la. I could have bored myself with that. But I said, listen, you clean it up however you feel like it. It's a beard trim and a shave, whatever. He gets so mad that I'm so lax about it. Mind you, this guy ends up being from Brooklyn. So I pieced all of it together. And instead, because I couldn't do anything about it, I'm already in the barbershop chair. Not only did I already process the payment to be there, but I was like already kind of trapped in the situation, right? I couldn't walk away with Wrigley. So I just start asking questions. So it is the opposite. I didn't just like ignore him and put on like a little pouty face and stare at him right in the mirror in which he's cutting my own head, or my hair that's not there. But I just remember thinking, I was like, ask him all the right questions. You're going to figure him out so much in the next 20 minute session that you're going to realize exactly why he has the attitude that he has. And I was like, all right, Justin, put your interviewer hat on. Let's go. So then I just started asking him. I was like, you know, what you doing around Nashville? You from here? Blah, blah, blah. Right. Okay. Got it. All right. What are you into besides the barbershop stuff? Oh, okay. Skateboarding. Da, 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 da. And then, you know, we get to the deep rooted, like, hey, I was in New York for 12 years. I was like, all right, tell me the craziest story. I'll give you mine. Cause I told him, I was like, I was living in New York for 5 years. Gives me the crazy stories about the subway train, the police people. He resents almost everything about New York City because of the people, to your point and my point, or stories, to our stories that we're telling. He said, everybody was hateful. And I was like, okay, well, if I was paid to,
just want to say black and white thinking for him to think that everybody is hateful. That's not the case. That's never the case.
And maybe he wasn't looking for the good. It sounds like to me when I was asking him certain questions about, you know, why did that happen? Like you're peeing on the side of the street. You get pulled over by a cop in New York City or like the cops come up to you. You're getting a ticket. That's gross. But he didn't see anything wrong with that. So I was like, this is a you issue, you know? And then I was like, if I was paid to be your therapist or your friend, I mean, I would have gladly taken the offer to like help him. But anyway, decided not to. And I just went about my day. I left feeling so depleted so much that I couldn't even get back on to like work mode after that barbershop appointment. Because in my head, I'm thinking, I'm exhausted mentally by even trying to figure out why this guy's being such a weird, you know, butthole in the barbershop. All that to say, one of those two approaches, mind you, then I go back to this Soho house last night and I see the same bartender. What do I do? Nothing. I didn't react. And like, he literally didn't give me water and I can complain to everyone in there. Right. And I can make sure that he gets fired. Will I do any of that? No. You know, I'm just going to have to avoid that. Same with the barbershop. I don't plan to go back to that barbershop. And I guess the lesson on my side, yours was like, so like it was so close and like in your proximity that it was like, yo, and you weren't not his customer. It was a very different relationship in the Barnes and Noble situation. But for mine, it's like, I was not only paying these guys in a way, right? I was like, you know, paying for the service to be there. But then like, I don't have this like customer's always right hat on. And I was being really gracious to them, tried to give them some peace of mind, at least in the situation. And still, you know, they may never change. And that's what I wanted to end with, is that folks may never change. And like the last thing we want to do as we're trying to all work on ourselves, right? As we're trying to love and respect ourselves and give that to other people, the last thing you want to do is go and try to fix everybody else, you know? And then I'll say one more thing. I came to Nashville and I'm still struggling on whether or not I would call this home ever, you know, and that's something that everybody can, you know, I'm sure has dealt with. And whether or not you need to settle down or you want to settle down, part of your environment is going to end up having to be to adapt to the people in that environment, you know, and something that is a very hard pill for me to swallow is that Tennessee's culture and the way that they live and the, you know, the pace of this area, I don't know if I'm willing to adapt to that. In which case, people have told me, you decided to come to Tennessee. They didn't come to you. So keep that in perspective. Again, these are all like self-fulfilling like prophecies, I guess, in a way. Like we make our own decisions. We get to decide how we want to live our life based on how much we love and respect ourselves. So then like when you are interacting with people day to day, you should really choose your poison, to be honest, because there's going to be a lot of like negative folks out there. You just can't really do anything about it unless you want your, you know, life or career to revolve around other people's, you know, progress and growth.
So well said. And I want to circle back to what you said earlier in that story. You said, if that were me at Barnes & Noble, I would have ignored the guy and just gone about my day. But then you self-corrected and said, perhaps that's avoidant behavior. You noticed that in what you were describing. So let's say that it is, right? Just theoretically. And let's say that the opposite side of that is to be overly emotionally effective and either get aggressive or angry. Right. Or so let's say those are two sides of the spectrum. And just to tie it back to mental health and positive communication is what I'm getting at with where I'm going. Let's say that those are two sides of the spectrum. Then what is the healthy middle ground? In my opinion, and the way I maybe should have responded, admittedly, is in the moment, call the guy out in a gentle tone, an easy manner, and say, yeah, I'm more than happy to move for you. But just so you know, sir, I really didn't appreciate the tone that you used, if I'm being honest, and I would just appreciate you not speak to me like that again. And I forgive you. It's totally okay. I'll get out of your hair. Something like that, you know?
I would agree that that's the middle ground.
Right? It kind of is. Or something along those lines, as long as it's an easy manner, a gentle tone, communicative and effective. So maybe that's the happy middle ground between avoidant and overly affected, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a testament to all healthy and positive communication for mental health. And he probably would have responded equally. And he's like, he would have said, fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah. And then we'll get more on the like self in a sec, but this is like this whole,
by topic, the way.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, by the way, that story you described about Soho House, you know, that in this article that I want to get to at some point, I think I sent it to you over text, but it's an article in The Atlantic called Why Are People Getting So Weird or something like that. Cause after this happened today, I like did some psychology research behind it and I found this interesting article.
I can't wait to hear it.
And it said, rudeness is contagious. Think about it. If someone is rude, it puts you in a bad mood. And then you are more likely to be rude to other people and so on. And that happens in society, the workforce.
Everywhere
but that's
you
why
go.
You notice. Yeah. And that's why you notice, like, guys, like, do we really want to be served by this guy? Because you're like, you could tell it's contagious.
What was the headline of the article again?
Let me find it right here. It's called Why People Are Acting So Weird from The Atlantic.
Why People Acting So Weird. I think weird is probably very broad, but I would even argue that people are awkward more than ever. So we'll get to that in a moment.
Yeah. What were you going to say, though? I cut you off.
No.
So I cut you off.
No. Haley Seinfeld? No. No, Dua Lipa.
Dua Lipa.
You know, I was going to say that... Right now, I think we're living in a time, it was on interacting with other people. And there's a couple of things I've noticed about I guess it's the style or the ways that our personalities are negatively affected based around our interactions and, you know, some of these negative interactions that we're experiencing. So for example, if you've ever met someone, folks listening, if you've ever met someone who, I don't know, maybe they're of high profile, maybe they're like Kevin and they were on a show, or maybe they are very popular in their community. I don't know. If you know anybody that's like that, pay attention to how social they're not. So I have a lot of friends, just like Kevin does, in the entertainment business or even in the influencer space, I guess. And they do not want to go to social outings. They don't want to go to gatherings. They barely want to go to anything if there's not business or profit attached. And I picked up on that note. So that's on one side, which is like whoever that popular person is, I guess. And then you look at the majority of everybody else who really want to connect with folks, but are probably like overly excited to do so, that everything feels like a mob or like a flash mob, or it feels like a big party of nonsense. So like I was, again, this is on Saturday, there was like a pool party, there's like a bunch of people lounging around. And yet what I'm noticing, the big point I'm noticing of the crowds in which these popular folks are avoiding, something I'm noticing about these crowds is that no one's really getting to know anybody. They're not really connecting, and they're not really feeling any probably good sense of belonging. And they stick to their little crowds. They look around. They start tiffing off at people. I'm sure they're being rude to one another, thinking that, you know, snarky comment here, you know, looking shade over there because that person is like da 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 da. Like, they're gonna find reasons to do that. Anyway, either of those examples, I'm just trying to dissect if any of that has to do with how they've been treated, you know, in environments or in public settings. Because I think right now, like, what I'm feeling a lot of the times, you too, actually, because you get picked up way more than I do in public. But it's like, do you just completely avoid all of it, you know, or do you go into like what I'm considering this like social mess and not feel anything when you're leaving? And you know what I mean? Like, this is all about like interactions, by the way.
You're absolutely right. I think part of that is shaped on experiences. And it even talks about that in some of the research that I did before this episode regarding, you know, what causes people to be rude or bitter. Among them, trauma. You know, if that guy at Barnes & Noble had some kind of trauma with the dog, then just say it. You know, I'm afraid of dogs. I'd understand. But he didn't. He chose to be affected and rude about it. It could be something pertaining to, you know, maybe let's take, for example, being a germaphobe. Maybe someone lost someone in the pandemic this year. Are they more likely to be a germaphobe because of that? Maybe. Would I understand that? Maybe. It's tough, though, because then I wouldn't necessarily expect them to say, you know, if they're being rude and germaphobic when I sneeze, like, hey, I lost someone in the pandemic who was close to me. Can you not sneeze? So we don't know the story behind a lot of people's behavior. That's the truth. One thing that I want to talk about is a technique that I learned that has helped me in mindfulness training on how to understand where you're at in terms of emotional affectivity. And there's this technique that I learned called SUDS, kind of like soap suds. SUDS. And I think it's an acronym for something like sensitivity, understanding. I don't know, but it works really well. And if you just think of your emotional affectivity on that, you know, a spectrum similarly to what we've been talking about, 0 being I am not emotionally affected at all, 10 being I am rageful, I am shaky, I am bitter, sad, I am whatever it is for you, right? But it's the end of the spectrum. Then try to identify where you're at different parts of the day. If you're in a calm state at home and you're having a great day, your SUDS might be at a 1 or a 2. If you're, you know, just had a horrible interaction or a fight with someone and you're shaky and furious, then your SUDS could be at an 8, 9, or 10. But it's a mindfulness technique that involves being aware of your own emotional affectivity, and it works. So that was one thing I wanted to give our listeners in managing emotional affectivity and giving yourself some love, giving yourself some respect, being able to understand what you need in the moment based on how affected you actually are.
Yeah. And to add to that, there's like, I mean, your practice with SUDS is similar to like when I'm waking up in the morning, I will usually practice meditation, getting better at it rather. And it's always in the sun. It's always outside. Always by myself. Anyway, I mean, you put yourself in the right environments, you can really begin to understand your mindfulness, to your point, Kevin, on how you're feeling and where your psyche's at, you know, not for the day, that's going to change, you know. And I think that you have to give yourself enough grace and have that drive flexibility in most cases to understand like, hey, you know, today I am a little tired and I can only complete 3 tasks. You know what? It's August 22nd. It is a Tuesday. So be it. You know what I mean? And then being able to manage your day according to that. And then just to wrap on the like expectations of mindfulness too. I mean, you got one day, you can take everything and you should only be taking everything one day at a time. So then from there, understanding how you want to spend that time throughout the day based on, like you had said, your emotional affectivity.
Yeah, totally. You know, Speaking of emotional affectivity, it got me thinking of other times where I've have felt severely emotionally affected. And you were talking about Nashville earlier, and you know how whether or not you wanted to adapt or whether or not you wanted to stay there, which is of course your choice. But it got me thinking to an instance that for me was one of the times I've been most emotionally affected in my entire life. And I think it's time for story time for our listeners. So when I was 22, this was 4 years ago, I was in Nashville for work, and it was a Saturday. And I was actually filming a week away for Netflix. And I obviously didn't have to shoot on Saturday, so it was my off day. And I thought, you know, what can I do on my off day? Like this would be a great opportunity to do something. And I should preface this story by saying I had begun my journey of not drinking at this point. So I wasn't actively drinking. I had made a choice that I was going to stop drinking well before this happened. So I thought, what can I do with my Saturday? It was Saturday night. I was alone. You know, it can be a lonely experience shooting a movie because everyone's either on a different schedule or working or flying in and out. I happened to be alone that day. So I went to downtown Broadway I went to Dierks Bentley Whiskey Row, and I thought, I'm going to go hear some live music. I'm not going to drink because I don't drink anymore. But I would just love to hear, you know, a honky-tonk band just play and be able to have a soda. That sounds really nice. So I wait in line to get in because it's kind of like a club vibe in Nashville. And I showed the bouncer my California ID, which was real, obviously, because I'm from California, and perfectly legal. I'm 22 at that point. And he looks at it, and he, like, gives it a double take with me. He looks to me, and he goes, "This is fake." And I go, no, it's real. And he goes, "Don't lie to me." And I'm like, "I swear I'm not lying. It's a real ID." And he's like, "Get out of line or I'm going to kick you out myself." And he from 0 to 100 really quickly. And I was like, whoa, like what is going on here? And then I was like, "Sir, I'm telling you, this is a real ID. Like, go ahead, scan it, look at it, whatever you need to do. I just want to go there and listen to music. I'm not even drinking." And he blew up out of nowhere, and he threw my ID into oncoming traffic in the street on Broadway. I was like, what the? That's a real ID. Like, what am I supposed to do if I lose that? Go to the DMV? Like, what is he thinking, throwing my ID into the street? And at that point, I got so emotionally affected. I was like, oh my God, I can't control other people, but all I am trying to do is have a soda and listen to some music and like be out and about as opposed to being alone in my hotel room watching Harry Potter 5. Like, yeah, that's, I'd rather do that. So I was like, I can't even do that because this guy's being an asshole. And See, even now it's like talking about it kind of get up a little bit.
Exactly. And I mean, I can go down a whole spiritual route of this. I mean, I think that we're meant to interact with certain folks to just learn after observing a situation like that. And if we can, I think now is a good time to go more into the self, because I think that when you,
that's where I was going to take it too. I was going to say, what, you know, what does that say about himself? You know,
exactly. And I'll give you my opinion. You know, it's the same guy in the Barnes and Noble, and it's the same bartender barber, you know, these, I mean, oddly enough, they're all men, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. There is something to, gosh, I guess that we all have to kind of quickly observe and pick up and either interact or move on right when these things are happening, because what's good, like, exactly, you either get too emotionally invested for whatever reason, you know, maybe it could be any situation, you know, and if you're holding that experience close to your heart and someone negatively, you know, affects it, you probably are going to be negative back. You know, or I mean, a healthy approach I've always taken, because I've worked on this, right, as someone who's trying to be better and be more empathetic and compassionate to people, is I really don't give weight to things anymore. I'm gonna say that again. I do not give that much weight to things or experiences anymore, and I just kind of let it be. And what I mean by that is, I'm not saying I'm a passive guy that like doesn't care about things. And trust me, there's a lot of things I've had to like not care about and let go of, right? Which we can talk about on another episode, that topic alone. But I would say, for example, like I take myself out all the time, just like you do. And if I'm going somewhere, I typically know, okay, well, if it's a honky-tonk Dirk's Bentley bar, that's not a place that I would take myself out to. Not saying you were in the wrong at 22 for doing that at all. It just, I've learned that there are particular places to be taking yourself out to get some live music and a drink. Or there's a, you know, if you're going to do some self-care and work on yourself some, like there's spots for that. There's environments for that. In which case, if it becomes a negative experience because of the people in there, then you can promptly, you know, take out your, you know, your book and pen and start taking some notes, because this is part of life. You know, humans are always meant to interact. And for some reason, we're living in a very chaotic, tense, anxious, you know, driven society. It's not just Nashville or LA at that point.
I'm going to be honest, man, even just talking about it gives me some anxiety. Let's be honest. This could be a triggering episode for some people, because we're talking about emotional affectivity, anger, anxiety, bitterness, rudeness. These things can be a trigger. We understand that, listener. You know, we're going through it with you, even just talking about it. It's therapeutic, yes, but it's also triggering. So I think it's important that we just breathe, take a little mindfulness second here, or a second to be mindful. And just think that, like, you know, there are ways to combat these feelings, and they're just feelings, you know, and I have to tell myself that sometimes. But you're doing great if you're sticking with us, listener. We're right, sticking with you.
There might be things that you're thinking about too, like, oh, that's happened to me.
It's the same. You mentioned Nashville, then I think of, oh, that time in Nashville when he threw my ID in the street. That sucked.
I'm gonna throw a big brother hat on here and say that it doesn't always have to be that way. I think that for every negative experience, I'm sure we've had 10 positive experiences interacting with folks.
Absolutely. And way to see it, like, not black and white, you know? That's the dialectic.
I think it's important to raise awareness of these negative experiences or interactions, rather, with other humans, because then you know what you need after experiencing those. That's the benefit. So if you do meet a butthole in a barbershop, or you go to a bar by yourself and you realize that, hey, I'm just not meant to be there, you know, you're going to start seeing, like, I couldn't have told Kevin I wouldn't go to a bar, you know, by myself. That's not the environment for me. You know, my phase of my life, I'm going to, like, a casual, private, quiet rooftop, you know, or somewhere where I feel like there's going to be five people. And what am I going to do? I might make friendly with those five people if I feel like being social. So then, same to your experience in Barnes and Noble, I don't go to bookstores. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like, all part of, like, self-respect and love has to be knowing how you're working on that self-respect and love. I love a beach, right? As opposed to, like, anything social if I'm working on myself. And not saying, you know what I mean? Like, in your experiences too, even with the bookstore, it's not to say that that's where most people are going to end up going, but anybody listening, think about the environments that you are able to find serenity in, you know, going back to some of that happiness hormones episode, where you can find that serotonin and really work on parts of you that you've been struggling with, or could be one thing that you're dealing with right now. And if you can figure out how it's impacting you and, like, your anxiety or your health, or, you know, your overall mental health, rather, like, there's negative impacts just going through one thing, you know, could be anything. But in that case, be very careful, you know, if you're going to put yourself in social settings when you could really be talking to your family or therapist. You can go take yourself out. You can call your best friend, you know.
And I have to say, at 26, I am much more likely to do what you described and go to a chill rooftop or something like that, especially now that haven't drank for 4 years. But at 22, it was, you know, I just was looking for something to do.
And from our experiences, exactly. I mean, maybe Kevin and I are sharing these stories and these experiences so that you guys don't have to go through similar situations. I mean, there's no playbook for socializing and getting to know other humans. So as you are being mindful about the ways that you interact with people, I think it's just important to realize where that negative energy lies, so you can either avoid it or know how to deal with it, you know, in real time.
You know, one thing I read in this article from The Atlantic, which I didn't realize it was featured in their One Story to Read Today series, It's a newsletter, and it says a newsletter in which our editors recommend a single must read from The Atlantic Monday through Friday. So it must have made that week's. It was important enough that it made that week's newsletter. But it talks a lot about unruly airline passengers. Have you heard about like all the? I mean, I feel like this is a consistent thing.
Yeah, I've seen
it. Yeah, where it's like people are getting out of their seats or escorted out of their seats because of their behavior, or they're like trying to break into the cockpit or something else. And I'm like, where is this behavior coming from?
Another one is concerts.
Yes.
Where people in the audience
getting thrown. Yep. They're throwing like bottles on stage. And so, but why is it happening in these public settings? I mean, airplane is a public setting. You've got 300 people in one plane. So, and a concert, you've got however many thousand people there. Why is it happening in these public places? Are people being triggered in public by other people's behaviors? Is it kind of what we're talking about here, where whatever that negative energy spreads? Because obviously this stuff probably isn't happening when they're just sitting at home with like two or three people. So why is it happening? It's like the more people, the more likely it is to happen. That said, hearing me ask it back, it makes sense that the more people you have in a room, the more statistically likely it is that someone's going to be out.
That's
of line.
True. I was just going to say,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, how do you say it?
Can't control everyone.
It can, exactly. The likelihood increases. I would argue that it always starts with one, you know, or I guess if it's two or three people that are together, maybe, but it starts with one, and more than likely, I'm going to generalize here. If you look back at anything that's happened, you know, with serial killers, with people that are just nutso,
oh God,
have mental health disorders, and it is tied to the mind.
Which, let's be clear, we're not putting those people all in the same
room. Not at all. We're not putting those people into the same room, and we're also not putting them on airplanes anymore. We're not, you know, but not to like keep on the negative, but part of these experiences on airplanes and concerts, I think, has to be that there's a level of insecurity or self-work that's not being done. I say insecurity because it's a lot of times in social settings, someone's going to act out if they're just so uncomfortably like not themselves, you know, but titles and labels aside, there is not enough self-work being done for that person that's causing a chaotic or negative experience. You know, you look at anybody you've met that you're like, gosh, you're just so pleasant. I mean, these are the people you and I surround ourselves with. That's why we're friends. But gosh, I just really love their energy. What a nice person. What a sweetheart. What a caring and giving and loving person. And I only met them for 5 minutes on the airplane. You know, I think that I should, like, I want to, and you do too. Like, we want to encourage folks to always be that way. And it's not every day that you can be that way in a social setting. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you can always be that way when the time is right. And when you feel like you can give that loving, affectionate, compassionate, positive energy to other people, because what did you do? You did it to yourself. You know, I would say, morning routines are everything. I don't care how long it takes. I've been in the midst of this right now in the past 2 weeks. And it's in the mornings where I'm like, gosh, Justin, you're just doing the best you can. You know, some days I'm like, hey, you actually have done pretty damn well this year for your situation. Take a break. Do one or two things today. You know, or there's days like yesterday, I was so motivated. I called everyone under the sun, got all these business things, you know, up and off the ground. And then I was tired today. I didn't feel like 110% like yesterday. Okay. But what am I still going to do? We're going to do this podcast. I'm going to give as much positive energy I can to this conversation. And then more importantly, I've taken time throughout the day to figure out what did Justin need? I've been drinking electrolyte drinks all day. I've been stretching all day. Right in the middle of this episode, I took this new formula called WellPath Mind for focus and memory, because I do think I had a little bit of brain fog this morning. Why? Alcohol. Great. I know what I'm doing. Like, I'm so aware, you know, because I've worked on these parts of myself for so long. And that said, it's like, you do want to start here, like you, right? You come first, then you can go project positive energy. And hopefully it comes naturally. But again, that takes a lot of work to get in that state of mind.
Well, that all shows. And you've always been, it always seems like you have a really good grasp on taking care of yourself and self-love. And I was going to, that was going to be my next question for you before we wrap up, which was, you know, how do you take care of yourself? And what is the best advice you could give to listeners to love themselves? And it sounds like you already talked about it, but is there anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, it's a never ending process. And I think it's beautiful. I said a little second ago that I don't care how many hours it takes. There is no timestamp. There is no rule book. There is absolutely no, you know, perfect way to take care of yourself and to love yourself and to respect yourself, you know, and all three of those things look different. What I've learned, at least, is in order to, again, respect, love, and take care of oneself, you need to really understand who you've become. So if you're listening and you're 50 years old right now and you're, you know, thinking back to all the things you've been through in your life, okay, great. Maybe this is like the first time you've ever had or even listened to this conversation. Or you're 16, you know, 16 or 18, and you're tuning in and you're just getting ramped up and excited about college, and maybe these conversations are helping you and you're focused so much on, you know, the rest of your life being this amazing self, you know, self-fulfilled experience. But right now it's changing every day. You know, yesterday I needed to stretch way more than I thought. And then I go to the gym every day and I can give everyone a boring story about my routines, right? But I think it's less of like, what am I doing? Because there's days in the gym, I feel like I'm going to pass out mentally because I'm not, you know, mentally there.
Bro, I heard you say it. You answered your own question. You said it changes every day. And just hearing you talk about it, it's listening to yourself, actively listening to yourself and asking yourself constantly, what do I need?
And why are people afraid of that? You know, like, don't ever be afraid to feel.
Never.
Like, to trust your intuition.
Think about it, too. It's like, in a healthy relationship, like marriage and family therapists say, you know, what's the best thing you could communicate with your lifelong partner or whatever it is, right? Like, in some kind of deep, intrinsic relationship that requires a lot of effort and nurturing. What is the best question to ask your partner? What do you need? That's the question.
Right.
So ask yourself the same thing.
Correct.
In the context of a relationship with yourself. What do I need? That's the definition of self-care. That's, you answered it, I think. So listener, I hope you take that away. Yes, it's non-negotiable. And listener, I hope you take that away and understand that in order to care for yourself, you need to understand what it is that you need, and your needs may constantly be evolving or shifting or changing in the moment. And that's normal. You know,
yeah. One thing I've also learned is that it's such an intangible thing to just think and feel and to work on oneself. It is not, I mean, listen, it sounds fluffy just saying it, but then you have to create tangible things. I just said it. I have specific products. What also helps me concentrate? Eucalyptus oil. I'm like, literally I do this when I work. I just sniff it and some reason it brings, you know, I don't know, mental clarity.
Yeah.
Sure. So,
and you don't need to justify it. That's what works for you. And,
yeah, and
that's your version of self-care.
Something to, exactly. And it's going to feel weird. You're going to kind of feel like a ninja or a yogi or an alien. Who cares? Like, feel it and do things that
embrace
some people
it,
love
yeah.
To dance. Yeah, embrace it. What about you? Do you feel like, as you've continued to work on yourself outside of, like, you know, professional counseling and anything else that we both have been through, it's like, what has that journey looked like?
I have a tendency to be super thoughtful and analytical. Like, I find my best answers to life's toughest questions in the form of logic. Maybe that's just who I am, but if I can turn emotion into like tangible logic, then I would say what works for me in terms of self-care is simply being more compassionate towards myself, being more understanding of myself and my needs, kind of like what you said, and having grace for myself, most importantly. That's something I struggled with for a long time. I didn't have grace for myself for the longest time. And it's funny because I also want to ask the question, or at least address, like, you know, because we've talked about self-love, then what about loving other people? You know, because this is an episode on love and respect. And it's like, if we've talked about self-love and self-respect, then what does loving other people, respecting other people look like? In my opinion,
so
it starts with the self.
It does.
That's the answer. It's like what we're talking about here in terms of being compassionate towards yourself and having grace for yourself. That stuff is going to translate via everything that we've been talking about in this episode to other people.
I was asked the other day. It does start with you. I was asked the other day quickly that, like, I needed to create an outline of my values, and from my values, identify what it was out of those values that were, you know, that were going to create the rest of my life. And I was like, do I get to start with a blank canvas? Friend goes, yeah. They were like,
my therapist made me do that in rehab. Like,
I mean, just
they
start
gave us
with
a shape.
They gave that's us a the first step.
Yeah. They gave us a sheet with like 150 different values, like loyalty, security, wealth, compassionate, all kinds of values, but then you have to like number them like through 1 to 5, like how much you value them. And then I had to like study them and stuff. And but
hit the reset button. I mean, we're both in that phase now. Something else I wanted to say before we close up is that, you know, don't be afraid to reset. I mean, and people will be disappointed. I have failed clients because I've hit the reset button. I have failed friendships because I've hit the reset button. By not going to weddings, by not delivering on contractual things that I had signed up for the rest of the year. But you know what? I don't care, you know, because at the end of the day, nothing is going to feel better than you saying, you know what? I gotta go. I gotta do me. I have to figure me out. I need to work on me, myself, you know? And I love the values chat because the first step I had to take was that white piece of paper. And I'm still working on it. You know, the one value I have right now is loving myself, right? And being a man of my word is a value. And I have yet to find the other, 8 or 10. So as you think about values, then you can really start patching them in. And the last thing I'll say about the reset button, that's been so powerful in this self, working on my self journey, it's been almost this interesting thing of like, wait, when you hit the reset button, you almost feel like a brand new person with a brand new start in a new chapter or season of your life. And tell me that doesn't get everybody riled up and excited. Do you know what I mean? Because everything else is in the past.
Excited.
And you know what you have to do? You have to let go a lot of that. And that's work. That is a lot of work. Hey, done with that. Close chapter, close door, da, 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 da. And just, you know, get excited about doing that. And that's, I think that's a part of self-care that people overlook all the time is letting go and starting over. Very simple things.
Letting go is one of the hardest things that someone can do. I've had to do it, you know, when I start new chapters, and sometimes I have to do it when I'm not ready. That's the scariest thing. You know, like I have somehow found myself in a situation or circumstances that force me to let go. And I want to hold on so dearly and tightly, thinking, why do I have to let go? It's better that I don't let go. But then it's like, once you do let go and time goes on, you see like, oh, that's why I had to let go. So well said, brother. I think that's it for the episode. What do you think?
I think so too. We keep going down this thing. We're going to have to do an extension of it. I mean, there's...
I know. We're going to have to revisit this topic. It's so interesting.
There's a lot to take away. And listen, there's nothing that says we can't go back to it next year or whenever it makes the most sense for Luminosity. But I just hope that if you've listened to some of these stories and experiences, like you do the work, you know, whenever you can this week to really think about what you need. I love that. You know, just
that's
the same
homework
thing you would ask anybody else. Like when you were first starting your first job, like you did have to, you were probably asking people like, what do you need? How can I help? Right. Do that to yourself. And I'll say this lastly, that you do not want to fall victim to this, you know, this output version of yourself that you can't do the inner work because you're always giving. That's exhausting. And I, as someone who did nothing but that for about 6 years in my profession, output. You can fall victim to that a lot of times, in which case you're not going to end up being able to find the right amounts of time or the energy, actually, right? Energy and time to then focus on loving and respecting yourself and doing the inner work. Because what are you doing? You're constantly outputting and constantly delivering for other people. And part of self-love, I think, is it's not just saying no. Everybody was like, say the word no. Yeah, I guess if everybody's asking you for stuff, no one was asking me for anything. As an entrepreneur, you have to do everything, right? You're doing the asking. And so I say, instead of thinking that you have to say no to everything, why don't you just say yes to the right things and then keep such a focused and intentional, right, set of what you're wanting to do, how you're wanting to take care of yourself, and then act accordingly day over day to our points earlier, which is understanding what you need on that day at that time, giving yourself enough grace, and then more importantly, finding the right tangible things to be doing and focusing on that can really allow you to grow and prosper. And then shit, take a day off. I mean, I'm taking a day off after this recording. Do you know what I mean? Like, give yourself so much grace. That's plenty of self-love as you walk away from this podcast.
I love it, brother. Love it. This week is all about self-love. Let's make this upcoming week all about just, you know, loving and respecting ourselves. What do you think?
I think it sounds great. And if
listener,
you take it
too.
With us, we love you.
Yeah, you go ahead and wrap it up.
Oh my God. I think I always have to, right? No, I'm kidding.
I
don't want to make him feel like he has to wrap any episode up, but if you've stayed with us this whole podcast episode, we really appreciate you listening wherever you're at. Somehow we're in your ear or on your stereo. And so if you've listened to some of these experiences and you're starting to find ways to take care of yourself, and then more importantly, your mental health and how it all contributes as one, you know, hopefully this was helpful, or as Kevin likes to say, abundantly resourceful. And we'll catch you on the next episode. That's for sure. And as we continue to build this brand out, we'd love if you guys share all of your thoughts by leaving a rating and review below, following both or either of us on Instagram, and then more importantly, staying tuned for the things that we have to come that we can hopefully find you guys in person at, like a live event or anything of that nature.
Love you guys. See you next time.
If you enjoyed this episode, Kevin and I would love if you would share it with someone who you believe can find value in the conversation too. Also, if you loved the episode, this show will only grow and reach more people with ratings and reviews. If you'd be so kind to leave one right where you're listening. We sure hope you found this helpful and cannot wait for you to come back to another episode of Luminosity.